Welcome to the Exec MBA podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share a conversation I recently recorded with two students in our Executive MBA class of 2020, Tiffany Pilafon and Andrew Harris. Tiffany and Andrew are both involved with a group called Masks for Seville, who is helping respond to the coronavirus pandemic in the Charlottesville community. We invited Tiffany and Andrew onto the podcast not only to talk about this group, but also their Darden experience, what they learned over the past 21 months of the program, and how Darden has helped them with their work with Masks for Seville. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Tiffany Pilafon and Andrew Harris. Andrew, Tiffany, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Tiffany, I should say, welcome back to the podcast. This is your second podcast appearance.
It is. You're not sick of me yet.
No way. I loved catching up with you before, and I'm so excited for today's conversation. So, Andrew, let's start with you. Since Tiffany's an old pro here and our listeners have heard from her already, let's start with you about your background. Who are you? What do you do?
Sure. Yeah. Well, pre-Darden, I've been working in software development for the last 10 years as project manager in the Charlottesville area, mostly in the mobile software space. And while that was enjoyable, it was something missing. I really wanted to grow my career, but also was interested in starting my own company, but I didn't know what. And I knew I had a gap in knowledge. So yeah, went to Darden. And while at Darden, I did switch jobs. I'm at Capital One now, working in marketing. So big switch out of software development. But pulling a lot of my background and organizing like distinct workflows and putting it into a different space.
That's great. And congratulations on the job transition. That's awesome.
Thank you.
All right, Tiffany, and how about you? Who are you and what's your background?
Yeah, I'm a Tiffany Pilafon. Like Andrew, I spent most of my career about 15 years in software product management, not in the mobile space, but in the SaaS space in product management, UX design, business analysis, and more recently have worked in kind of broad business operation roles as chief of staff. And now I'm in marketing as well. So I run a marketing performance analytics and insights team for Thomson Reuters in the tax business. So that's where I am now.
Nice. Well, I know how busy you are. So appreciative of your taking time out of your afternoons to come here on the podcast. I want to ask before we get much further along, how are you and your families doing? Tiffany, everybody okay?
Yeah, everybody's okay. I have two young kids at home, 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And so they're not at school right now. But we're just kind of hitting our stride with how my husband and I can both work and take care of the kids. We have a little bit of help. We joke that every day is like a Saturday, not in the best of ways because we're like exhausted by the end of the day, doing all the things. But we're healthy and we're safe, and we spend a lot of time outside, so we're doing relatively okay.
I'm glad to hear that. I know we have a lot of conversations with prospective students, and I will say this is the first week where I've started to hear from people that they feel like they may be adjusting, kind of figuring out their schedule, somewhat similar to what you mentioned. How about you, Andrew? How are you and your loved ones doing?
Yeah, we're doing really, really well, all considering. So no kids. I bless to anyone who has a kid in this situation and trying to balance parenthood and working. I don't know how you're doing it. Fortunately, it's my wife and I and a dog. And so the dog's getting a lot of walks. We are spending a lot of time in our yard. My list of house projects continues to grow, especially with Darden classes wrapping up last week.
Yeah, I've talked to so many people who have endeavored to finally do all those home improvement projects they've put off. So it seems like a time for that. So Tiffany, let's come back to you. One of the things that we share with prospective students often is that for many of our current students and alumni, the decision to pursue an MBA was actually a multi-year consideration. They thought about it for a long time. I'm curious about your journey. How long did you think about an MBA before deciding this is my time in actually applying to Darden?
Yeah, I thought about it for a long time, but in a punctuated kind of way. I had a time kind of early in my career when it was growing rapidly, and I just felt out of place at the table, and I had no idea what some folks were talking about when I was young and relatively inexperienced, and I thought maybe I should get an MBA, and then I would have a clue what was going on here. And, you know, you eventually figure it out and you adapt, and so I did that, but recently, more recently, when, you know, we started this whole process, I just felt like there was, even though I had a lot of experience under my belt, about 20 years of, you know, professional experience, I still felt like there was this language that I didn't quite understand. I just was not incredibly fluent in it, and I didn't understand all the levers of business. And lots of conversations with my husband later, I really was excited about the intellectual stimulation and the challenge that an MBA program would give. And I wanted to do it in a concentrated way that wasn't going to be strung out over a million Coursera classes or a million online classes. It was something that I could experience rather than just do. So, yeah, that's when it kind of turned the table for me.
And how about you, Andrew? Does Tiffany's story resonate with you, or is your journey a little bit different?
No, I was going to say it's very similar to Tiffany's. I think probably right after undergrad, I started thinking about the idea when I was getting into my career. But it really accelerated. So that was many, many years ago, and it accelerated after I took a seminar with Mark Modica, who's a professor at Darden. And it was like a half day negotiations training. And I went home and told my wife about it. And I was like, this is fascinating. Maybe I should look into this. And it was with her encouragement that kind of snowballed into applying and thus attending. So it was, I think I thought about it over the course of a decade, but really it was always in the back of my head. And then all of a sudden there was a trigger and just ran with it from there.
How does it feel to be at the end of the program, Tiffany? I mean, y'all are just wrapping up the second leadership residency as we're recording this this interview.
Yeah, that's right. We actually have our last, like our real last class 2 days from now. So it's a really strange feeling because it's a really strange time. I think it would have been a strange feeling anyway, not having to think about the readings that you have to do this week, and do you understand these concepts, and what about your meetings with your learning team, or do I have final exams to worry about? That's strange to have an opening of time. But the other part is that this is kind of a soft close on the MBA process. I think a lot of, you know, like high school seniors, college fourth years and seniors, people just finishing their degrees are going to have these same feelings of, lack of closure, maybe. So I'm happy with the way that the university has been handling the decisions that are made around closure and graduation. But still, it still feels a little bit strange that it's over and we didn't get to see everybody and kind of say goodbye in person yet. So
no,
that's how I feel.
I can absolutely understand that. We had Jim Dietert and Laura Bordoni on the podcast. It was actually our most recent episode aired last Friday, and you know, Jim and Laura both talked about this sort of feeling of sadness that they have and members of your class have because you've reached the very end, and these experiences that are these kind of last time together, and of course graduation, which is a celebration for not only the students in the class but all the people who supported them along this journey. And we talked so far about kids and spouses and, you know, the team of people who share this experience with our students, not to mention families and friends. They are also getting to sort of miss out on that kind of closing experience. Although I will say to the university's credit, Jim Ryan has come out and said, we have found two potential dates for an in-person graduation. One's in October and then one's later. So the following year, and the university and Darden have said, we're going to find a way to celebrate in person, you know, once the virus lets up. So, you know, to your earlier point, Tiffany, I think the school has responded well, but it is a, it's a tough situation.
Yeah. And we are, I'll just say, you know, as students, we are really thankful that, you know, we're being taken into account and the feelings around this for us and our families are as well.
Yeah. That, I thought it was great that there was a pretty immediate town hall set up by the program, and Dean Beardsley was there, and program leadership and faculty were on. And I just really appreciated hearing from you and your classmates. As I know you were processing a lot at that time. So it was nice to have that space, and it was great to hear from all of you and see all of you online. How about you, Andrew? What's it like to be here at the end of the program?
Yeah, I think it's a little bittersweet. It's extremely exciting to know that you completed this, but not being in person, I'm definitely someone that loves being around people. And I think a lot of our classmates feel the same way. So that's been hard. I have a lot of empathy for the 4-year students who are going through this, probably in a way worse space. We were already prepared for online classes at Darden, so I think that transition was easy. It's the balloon's going out very slowly at the end instead of a big bang. But to your point, to everyone's point, I guess, about the like graduation announcement came out. I know where I was when that announcement came out, because it landed in the middle of a class, and all of a sudden the attitude and people's morales were lifted. Putting plans together, I think, are going to be, it's very difficult to do in this situation with so much uncertainty about COVID-19 and how the coronavirus will impact us in the future. But starting to put a resemblance of normalcy back together, having a plan for an October graduation, obviously May backup, definitely lifted spirits, and it gives us something all to look forward to, which for me, I'm very excited about.
Absolutely. So I'm curious, this is also a time you mentioned kind of the connection and that you have with your classmates, and that sort of, this is our last time together. It's also a time when I think a lot of people take stock on what's happened with, their sort of growth over the past roughly 2 years, you know, where they were when they started the program, now they're here at the end. Tiffany, I'm wondering, have you been thinking about any of those things as you have worked your way through LR2? What's your impression of sort of the progression that you've had during this time?
Yeah, you know, you can't get away from thinking about those things, I think. And in particular, I went back and during LR1, one of our assignments involved writing what ended up being kind of a letter to yourself. And I went back and read it because I thought that I would need to. And it's really interesting to me to see what I wanted to accomplish for myself. And what is really interesting is that I've accomplished so much more. You know, what I wanted was to engender in myself a sense of confidence and fluency and pride in having this accomplishment. But really, I have gained so much more than that in terms of this incredible network of allies. And beyond anything that I have done in this program, I have just gathered this army of support that I never realized would be a part of my journey. And I think one of the things that I'm really reflecting on now towards the end, and really also not being able to see everybody right now, is just how thankful I am to have them all in my life. You know, never in your life are you going to walk out of a situation with 130 advocates for you and your career and 130 people that are going to tell you how it is and be honest with you. Nobody at your job's going to do that for you that well. So I'm just blown away. And I'm also a little bit sad I'm going to miss that interaction every day. So yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that network and that kind of army of support a lot this past couple of weeks.
Jim Dietert had a really interesting take on the student and the sadness that you and your classmates have been experiencing. And I thought this was a really, really good point. The fact that y'all were sad, that you were disappointed, that you weren't going to be together, says a lot about the quality of the program and the people in the program, right? If people were just coming in and this is all just about moving on and getting an MBA and going forward, super transactional. I don't know if you get that kind of sadness. I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it.
I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, Andrew and I have become good friends throughout the course of this program, and we'll remain that way, whether he likes it or not. But I would agree. The class was genuinely sad not to see each other, and there's really strong connections that have been made and advocacy for each other.
That is fantastic to hear. Andrew, have you been doing some reflecting on the past 21 months or so, thinking about sort of where you were when you started and where you are now?
Yeah. When we started the program, there was the buzzword transformational growth was thrown around relatively loosely. And I guess I didn't fully appreciate it until about halfway through, I started realizing, oh, no, I'm changing. This is changing for the better. Looking back in the last 21 months where I was and where I am today, it's just there's the network, there's the knowledge of business, but really there's the amount of confidence that you gain having the support system, having the knowing where to look for more information, knowing what you're good at, what your strengths and weaknesses are. I know that I will hire a good accountant one day. It will not be me, as example. I think it's been humbling looking back of how much you do change, especially like if you give it all and throw yourself into it, you can really come out the other side as a very different person, arguably a better version of yourself, who I didn't really realize I needed to grow that much. But I think it was during the job hunt that I did in the middle of the program, a lot of the shades were lifted, and I really got to know who I was. And then going through the very end of this program, looking back and thinking about where I was in 2018 versus 2020, it kind of blows my own mind. And I hope my wife agrees. I'm sure Tiffany does, and being that she is stuck with me probably for a lot longer than she actually does care to admit.
Well, it's always great talking with you, and it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. I will admit, I was reading an interview with Tyson Bell talking about the coronavirus response in Charlottesville, and he name dropped both of you in that, talking about this group that had formed in Charlottesville to help with the response and with the personal protection equipment. PPE supply chain and thinking about those things. And it's really, I thought, gosh, what a great example of executive format students putting their experience and their education in action. So Tiffany, you want to set the stage for us a little bit and talk about what this group is, maybe how this group formed and the work that you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. Tyson, who is also known as Dr. Tyson Bell, is an infectious disease and critical care physician at the UVA hospital. And when the COVID-19 pandemic kind of started getting hold of the United States, he, rightly so, was worried about Charlottesville and asked for anybody in Charlottesville that wanted to help, let him know. And so Andrew and I raised our hands and we formed a group called Masks for Seaville. And the initial few weeks was a little bit crazy trying to figure out among all of the other people who wanted to help how we could really make a difference and differentiate ourselves from all of the other efforts going on. Don't want to duplicate efforts, we want to add to them. And so Masks for Seaville works to support hospitals and skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities, and also the broader kind of vulnerable community of Charlottesville to understand how they're using their supplies on hand, what they have, what they need. And if we're not able to get them what they need, work with the community and the UVA Biomedical Engineering Department and other citywide volunteers to make what they need, either by 3D printing or crafting. And so I'm involved specifically with helping the area, hospitals and skilled nursing facilities model their supply and demand of PPE to make sure that they have enough on hand and to understand how much they need if they don't. So Andrew's been working really closely with the biomedical engineering community and the maker community as well. So Tyson, Andrew, myself, and a colleague of ours, Rebecca, have formed this group, and we've been making a difference in the community. It feels great.
I can imagine. I think a lot of us, when all this started to happen here in a significant way in the U.S., I think we all kind of wondered, how do we get involved? How do we help out? And I remember reading Tyson's post on LinkedIn where he was talking about the challenges in the situation. And it did seem pretty stark based upon what he was sharing there. Andrew, talk a little bit more about the experience that you've been having on sort of 3D printing and working with the biomedical engineering group. That sounds super interesting.
It's been fascinating. By trade, I've been in software, so I'm not used to watching anything material things come together. And Tiffany could vouch, like, we've had some fascinating Zoom calls looking at demos of products and the amount of testing that community is putting masks and face shields and other types of parts. There's a tremendous amount of testing that I could have never actually imagined that we have access to. But so one of the things that came out of us scrambling, like, to try to make a difference and see how we could help is we were always looking for, like, where are the holes? Neither Tiffany or myself are true engineers by any means, and we're not doctors. So we knew we were coming from with a completely different lens, and we wanted to leverage what we were good at, which is spreadsheets and organizing, like, work. So from the 3D printing piece, we quickly realized that because doctors and nurses and others who have to wear masks for 12, 14 hour shifts, they were getting a lot of pain in their ear because the mask strap would go around your ear to secure to your face. And there was a Boy Scout came up with a design to print, 3D print a piece of plastic to let the straps of the mask adhere to the plastic behind your head instead of going around your ears. And it would relieve the pain. And you can get through a shift without a splitting headache. The doctors and nurses were literally putting tape on their ears. So their protection was causing a lot of pain. And once we saw how easy this was to resolve, we had already organized 20 some volunteers who had access to 3D printing and got them mobilized. I think in 2 weeks we printed and distributed 4,000 of those straps to the area hospitals and nursing facilities. While that's ongoing, there's also a huge initiative in the biomedical space that is doing face shields, like laser cutting plastic and putting foam padding in there so you can wear a face shield for an entire shift. Again, we're trying to think above and beyond of how fast we can do it. We'd rather make sure that it's going to be something you can endure for the entire 12, 14 hour shift. Cause you can't take the stuff off. That's what we're protecting people against, the disease that can just appear in your face. So, you need to be able to wear that equipment all day.
So Tiffany, you had mentioned that you're working on sort of modeling the supply chain. I feel like in the sort of public discourse, we've talked more about supply chains over the past month than maybe at any other time, at least in recent American history, whether it's a food supply chain, a toilet paper supply chain, and then obviously personal protection equipment supply chains. How do you think about approaching, getting your head around this question of, do we have enough? What do we need? How does someone get started with that kind of project?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've learned a lot along the way. And I'll start by saying that I am not a supply chain expert, but I'm great with spreadsheets. So to me, I thought about it as a pretty, it's a big problem, but it can be broken down into small steps. And so I thought about the, usage of equipment as just an addition and subtraction equation. You start with a specific amount. Hopefully you can add some via the supply chain, but you're definitely going to use some. So you add and you subtract, and then you end up with another amount. And so modeling that usage over a period of time with a million other factors, you know, how many patients do you think you have? How sick are they? How many times do you need to check in on them? What do you need to wear when that happens? It involved something that I'm really familiar in my life, which is kind of like requirements gathering. So I spent a lot of time on the phone with physicians and nurse managers on the front lines, asking them how they are taking care of COVID patients and what equipment they use. I spent a lot of time with supply chain managers to understand what can you get easily, what can you not get easily, when are you expecting shipments, how long are they typically delayed. So it really is just asking a million questions about how the process works. And then you understand what the math equation looks like. So my supply chain model and burn down, kind of PPE burn down model, is probably way more simplified than any, you know, manufacturing facility would use or Amazon would use, but it works for this scenario and it helps you understand, are we on track or are we not on track? But it was very much a leaning on what skills I did have to be able to understand this kind of new world of healthcare supply chain.
As you gathered those requirements, what were some of the most surprising things you learned along the way, or the conversations that you had that were like, I've never thought about that, huh?
Yeah, you know, all of them were surprising because taking care of an infectious patient is incredibly complicated, as you would imagine. But just the process of donning and doffing your PPE, like the way that the nurses put on their PPE and take off their PPE and the steps that go into that and how precise they need to be, and they wipe down this or that in between each step. That was meticulous. And they actually have like experts on staff that help them take on and put on and take off this equipment to make sure that they do it right to minimize the spread of infection. So that was fascinating to me. Unfortunately, I've never been in the position that I would have had to have seen that, but it is meticulous. Yeah.
Andrew, as you think about what you're working on now, and sort of where the group's work is going, what are some of the things that y'all are thinking about? You talked about face shields, you talked about these sort of 3D printed solutions for this kind of ear pain. What else are y'all working on or thinking about? It seems like we're going to be fighting this battle for a little bit longer, at least.
Yeah, the last piece of what you just said is incredibly important. Is this is not a sprint. It's what we've been saying a lot recently is like, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon that doesn't really have an ending in sight. So with that said, we do expect that a lot of like big manufacturer and the supply chains will eventually catch back up. So when that happens, where do we focus? And that's the question we're starting to think about now. What we're seeing is a need of like surgical, like gowns and hair coverings or head coverings. There's finite supplies of those. So we're starting to shift our lenses in that direction. Wondering, we can't 3D print that type of thing, but we can possibly use some of the other tools that we were leveraging for making the masks and face shields. So that's one direction we're looking. And the other is equitable distribution. We know the people who, the big names and big area hospitals, of course, they have their own supplies, or maybe they need a little bit of augmentation. But there's a lot of communities out there that either don't have easy access to supplies, or they haven't been able to request through the internet because they don't have access, as an example. So we're looking at those types of situations as well, and really trying to think through like what is the best way to get supplies to people in need who otherwise wouldn't have access to normal supplies. And with all of that said, trying to work with our area governments and committees to help with that as well.
So Tiffany, that's an interesting point that Andrew's making about equitable distribution. Is that something that you realized that you were going to have to think about as a group at the beginning, or is that something that's kind of become something that you realized you needed to think about as you've gotten into this work?
No, it's very much been part of our focus since the very beginning, because there are a lot of communities in need. We know, you know, the hospitals take care of the sickest patients, but there are communities of people that live in close proximity. And a lot of those happen to be poor or minority communities. There are also homeless shelters and skilled nursing facilities and group housing situations where, like Andrew said, they just don't have the connections through the supply chain the way that hospitals do. But they have a lot of people living in close quarters who might not have the means to keep themselves safe with equipment. So the way that we've always been wanting to make sure that whatever supplies we do gather and create, that we have a mental model and really even a written down model about how we decide who gets what. That's a really difficult decision. And with so many communities in need and they're all in different kind of outbreak statuses, how do you decide who gets what? And so we've been working with some attorneys and some other experts on that too, to understand how we might be able to do this fairly in a way that protects the community the most and also protects the most vulnerable too.
Gosh, how do you think about that? I recognize it's probably, it sounds like you got a lot of people sort of thinking about this question, and it's something that you think about collectively as a group all the time. How do you approach that kind of question that seems like a difficult one to consider?
Oh, we've taken a lot of different tacks at it, and I don't think we've come up with, we definitely have not come up with what the answer is. I don't think there's any one answer because the situation changes every day. However, we tried as hard as we could to try to find kind of prior precedents of you know, supply distribution. And so we reached out to some of our Darden colleagues who have contacts in the National Institutes of Health and in the CDC and FEMA and Amazon and places that do disaster relief supply distribution to understand what their rules were around that. And some of them applied to this type of situation and some of them didn't. We also got involved with an attorney who helped us understand what the laws were today about giving things to people in a pandemic. So we tried to gather as much information as we possibly could. But to be honest, we're still really wrestling with the question.
I think Andy Wicks would love to add this to his ultimate questions class. I think the fact that we keep asking the question on a regular basis, and every time we've been partnering with other groups that are going in the same vein in town and making sure that they're thinking about these types of questions. The more people that are at least aware that this is a question that needs to be answered, I think the better. So it's not just first come, first serve, because the people who, not everyone, let me rephrase this. There are people who are going to request more than they need, and we are conscious of this. And so we're trying to come up with ways to ask questions that aren't too invasive, but also can give us a general sense of, are you hoarding equipment? And could someone else use this instead, because you have enough on hand already?
This is now, I think, the second or maybe third time Andy Wicks' class has come up on the podcast. For our listeners who are less familiar with Ultimate Questions, a quick aside here, do you want to explain what that class is and what you talk about in that class?
Yeah. So Tiffany and I both took this as an elective, I think in Q9. But the class itself is asking, what is the purpose of life? What is finding meaning in your own life is kind of the root of it. But it explores other extremely challenging questions that don't necessarily have a correct answer, but are incredibly important questions to ask and really give time to think through. It ultimately, whatever your decisions are, could impact the way you run a business or the way you run your own life, for that matter. But yeah, it's a very insightful class. I do recommend it. I had a great time. You will cry at the end.
Tiffany, what did you think about that class?
Well, I would also add that you would cry at the beginning of every class, every day. That was kind of a running joke in our class. But I agree with Andy. You know, Andrew, about Andy's class. It was one of my first choices in my electives. And Andy Wicks also teaches ethics. And I just really enjoyed the opportunity to step back from spreadsheets and quantitative analysis and even some of the other types of qualitative analysis that we have to do and just think. And we joked in the beginning of the elective that the reading was just so different than the reading that we had done for the past year and a half, because we went back to, you know, 16th century philosophy and does religion matter? Does it have a place in business? Do your personal views have a place in business? These are really hard questions that, you know, it takes a year and a half of going to school with a small group of people to be able to feel comfortable enough to have those conversations with them. So that, to me, was a class that I got the most, some of the most out of in my entire time at Darden, because I got to know a lot of classmates on a way different level than you do when you're talking about strictly business. I really enjoyed that class. It was really complex, and it made me question a lot of things that I thought were pretty solid for me.
Well, Andrew, how do you think your Darden experience has helped you as you've worked on this group, Masks for Seville? I can take some guesses, but I think it's always interesting to hear from the person directly. Do you think it's been helpful to you?
I think if I had never gone to Darden, I would have seen that there's a crisis. I would have wondered, what could I do? And that would have been where my thought pattern would have stopped. But I think because of Darden, yes, there was a network that kind of got me really into it, but more importantly, knowing the right questions to ask, how to frame a problem, how to think through communication, what needs to be done, prioritizing. I think a lot of what I got out of Darden allowed me to be ready for that type of situation when it came up.
How about you, Tiffany?
Yeah, all of that for sure. And I would also say, you know, and I think Andrew and I, being in the product development space, we're used to breaking down big problems into manageable pieces, but this is a really, really big, big, nasty problem. And it really helped to have the breadth of understanding of systems, I think. I'll just say broad systems, to be able to understand how different players here are connected and how we can impact them. And you know, obviously, all of the intense practice with Excel, even more above my typical job, has helped me with the modeling. But the other part is the confidence that, you know, you throw any problem our way and we'll figure out how to do something with it. And that even though Andrew and I are not physicians, we're not nurses, we don't work in the medical field, you know, the healthcare system is still a blissful mystery to us in a lot of cases, but we can help this and bring business and operations skills to something where they need it. And so there is a balance that I think we bring to what is, at its heart going to be a healthcare problem. Andrew and I bring a non-healthcare perspective and balance to that as well. So I don't think either of us ever doubted for a second that we could do something to help. But I think Darden helped us figure out how to help much more quickly and much more effectively.
So one last question. We have prospective students who listen to this podcast. In addition to incoming students, you're going to start in our class of 2022. People who are very early in the process, just kind of thinking about, is an MBA right for me? And then people who are obviously, I know for sure that I'm coming to Darden. What advice would you have for the prospective students who are listening? Andrew, anything that you would share with them?
If you're a reader, read all the books you want to read right now. but in seriousness, you'll become a master at prioritizing. It's okay for your priorities to change in the course of your life, whether you prioritize school, work, or your family. Like those are the three big ones. And I think knowing that it's okay that these priorities will change is really important, at least psychologically. And get ready. It's a good time. I think you're going to come away with it with a whole new perspective on the way you look at the world.
Make a good point about the reading. Obviously, case reading will take up a lot of your otherwise set aside hours for pleasure reading. But you know, y'all are getting ready to graduate. I'm sure the pleasure reading will pick up here in just a few weeks.
Oh, don't you worry, it started.
Tiffany, how about you? Any advice for our prospective student listeners?
Yeah, I would just kind of hinge off something that Andrew said. I love how he said that you just have to accept the fact that your priorities will change, and they'll change a lot over time, and that's okay. And what I would say is, I may have given the same piece of advice last time you and I talked, Brett, but maybe this is different. I think the biggest thing that I learned that I wish I had learned sooner was what good enough looked like, and that it was okay to be good enough sometimes in some places. I think a lot of, you know, Darden's an incredible program and there are a lot of smart people there. And these smart people are not used to doing less than they can and that they're capable of. And so a really hard lesson to learn is, how much is enough? How much is enough to put in at work? How much is enough to put in at home? How much is enough to put in at school? And, you know, the answers to those questions change every week. But knowing that and giving yourself permission not to get an A+ in everything is extremely liberating. And it actually frees you up to do really well at the things that really matter and not everything all the time. So I would just say, try and figure out for yourself what good enough is and start practicing cutting yourself some slack when you don't get the A+ all the time.
I'm so glad you both said what you said. I think those are two great pieces of advice. And Tiffany, no problem if you said that before. It can't be said enough. We stress that with prospective students all the time, to say that you can't do everything all the time to the max, you know, just for your own health and well-being in this program. And so you're going to have to shift your priorities around, and you're going to have to kind of figure out when you've done enough to be ready for class. It may not be perfectly prepared, or, you know, when you've done enough on a project or a deliverable, or, you know, just kind of figuring out where that line is. That's how you manage all these things simultaneously. Well, it's been great spending time with both of you. Thank you for all the work that you're doing for the Charlottesville community. And obviously, congratulations. It's been such a pleasure having y'all here at Darden with us for the past 21 months or so. And we're so lucky to count y'all as alumni. So thank you and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And that was my conversation with Tiffany Pilafont and Andrew Harris, two students in our Executive MBA class of 2020. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's exec@darden.virginia.edu. And until next time, thanks for listening, stay safe, and be well.